Okay, so we'll start with, I think, what is arguably, probably not even arguably, almost definitely the most famous Agarata in Menachot, which is a... What? No, that's in Chagiga.
What is that?
Pardes. Which is this Gemara over here. It's about 9 lines down. Amar Rav Yehuda.
Oh, I know this one.
Yes, it's a very famous one, but I want to analyze it, okay?
Fantastic.
Okay. Really? You don't know?
Oh, I know this one.
I might know it, but
Is this the one where he shows them every keep?
Yeah, that one. It's a well-known one as things go, but I want to try to understand it, okay? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. First, let's read it once, and then let's try to think methodologically and try to analyze it, okay? So, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Bishah she'ala Moshe l'marom. Right, when Moshe went up to heaven, meaning, why did he go up to heaven?
Yeah,
thank you. To get the Torah. Yeah, so this is probably the... As you'll see from context, this is that first time. He goes to get the Torah. So he found that God was tying the crowns, the tagin, to the top of the letters. Yeah, whatever that means. So, Amar Lefanav Ribono Shel Olam. She said to him, God, Mim Akev Al Yadcha, who is... delaying you. Who is making you do that, right? Ma'akev l'no means to prevent, meaning who's holding you back? Meaning the Torah is written and you're still there working on it. You're tying these crowns. So Amar lo, he said, well, Adam echad yesh she'atid lihyot b'sof kamadara, there's a guy who will be born in many generations. Akiva ben Yosef shmo. His name is Akiva ben Yosef, otherwise known as Rabbi Akiva. Shadid l'drosh al kol kotz v'kotz tilin shel halachot. Who on every crown will teach mountains of halachot. Amar l'fan of Rabbanu shel olam. So he said, okay, hirayuli, do me a favor, show me him. Amar lo, he said, fine. Chazor l'acharecha, go backwards. Right, it's like this, you know, sort of science fiction-y fantasy thing, right? You walk backwards, go back in time, forward in time, I don't know. Amar l'fan of... Halach v'yashav v'sof shmona shirot. He went and he sat in the eighth row in the base medrash. And some gear said, yurched shirot. Okay. V'lo yodea mayin omrim. He did not understand what was going on in the base medrash. So, I'll be happy. Right? You're not the only ones that sometimes have bad days in yeshiva. Tashash kocho. So he was depressed. He was weak. Kevan she'egil adavar echad. When he got to a certain halacha, amr lo tamidav. The student said to Rabbi Akiva, Rebbe, minayin lacha. Rebbe, how do you know this? Amar lahen, halacha la Moshe, misinai. It's from Moshe, from Sinai. Nityashva dato. Moshe was calmed down. He was fine. Chazar balafnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he came back to God, and Amar lafanav. So he said to God, Rabbanu Shel Olam, Yezhecha Adam Kazeh, there you have a person like this. And you're giving the Torah through me? Amar lo, shtok. He said, shut up. Right? No, whatever. Shah. Right, silence. Kach Allah b'machshava lefanai. Such has it come before me in thought. Amar lefanav. Okay. Rabbanu shel olam, God. Heretani Tarato, you showed me his Torah. Hareini Scharo, show me his reward. He said, okay. Amar lo chazor lecharecha, go backwards. Chazor lecharecha, so he goes backwards again. Rosh shoklin bisaro bimakolin. And they saw them scraping his skin off with metal combs. Amar lefanav, he said to God, Ribono shalom, zu Torah vizu schara. This is Torah and this is its reward. Amar le shtok. Kach alav machshava lefanai. Said, Shah, that is what has come to me. Okay.
I like how Moshe asks, like, why do bad things happen to good people? And God's like, shut up.
Yep. Okay, good. Let us now work together to understand this Agarata. Okay, first things first. Literal or not?
No,
probably
good.
Not.
Okay, good.
Why not?
Because how can you say... that Hashem who said to Moshe, and we have a record of Hashem who said to Moshe, oh yes, this guy Akiva ben Yaakov.
Yosef.
And Yosef.
And also, and God is sitting, God is tying, right? I mean, this is all the classic stuff of...
thought for a second...
Okay,
when
there's a level of anthropomorphic metaphor going on here. Okay, that's fine.
Akiva ben Yosef.
Okay, good.
Incredible.
Good. Let us, there's different things in this Agadah that we got to pick apart. Okay?
Okay. How did you know, like, after he became famous, and since, like, when he's a bum and a nobody, probably lost the name of Kiva.
Because then he goes to his base medrash, and Rabbi Kiva's teaching, and Moshe is sitting in the back and doesn't understand what's going on. That's what we know.
This is before Moshe really finished being taught.
God doesn't have to refer to people by their title. I'm just saying, right? He could be Akiva Ben Yosef, be a rabbi. God doesn't have to, you know, like your parents never have to refer to you as rabbi or doctor, right? Neither does God. God doesn't have to say, oh, Harafa Gon. He doesn't have to do that, okay? So you can be a big Gon and God is not under any. Good. So let's try to understand what is going on here. Okay. And there's a lot going on in this Agadah, but let's try to think methodologically. So first thing, okay, most of us are in agreement that this is probably metaphorical at some level. Okay, what lessons are is it teaching? Let's, before the schar part, let's focus on the first part. What is the purpose of this Agadah? Is it halachic, philosophical, ethical?
Philosophical.
Okay, philosophical. Is it halachic at all?
Kind of.
A little bit.
Why?
I mean, it's about how you can take any part of the Torah and get mountains of
good. So it indicates, first of all, right, there is a halachic component to this, and this is one of those things that we saw, right? Agadah may have different levels, right? There is a little bit of a halachic component here, which is that it at least indicates this possibility that halacha can be derived from the crowns on the letters, right? Whether we actually ever do that, Maisa, Rabbi Kiva did, whether we know about these, right? Not totally clear, but fundamentally it has a halachic component to it. There's another halachic component to it, which is that if you look at these pictures here, right, the reason this Gemara is where it is because it precedes, if you continue three lines down, right, like continue the next three lines, Amar Rava, Shiva Otiyot Shichot Shlosha Ziyunin. There are seven letters which require three crowns, technically three Zions, because that's what they sort of look like. The Elohim, Shatnevis Gatz, and these are them, right? The Shatnevis Gatz letters, okay? Meaning Shin, Ayin, Tet, Zion, that's just the letters, right? Those letters, yes? Shin, Ayin, Tet, Nun, Zion, Gimel, Tzadi. Okay. The Rav pointed out once that there is a machlokes, there's a machlokes Rishon, the majority view is what do you think about the following Shiloh? Let's say you forgot, or the sofer did not put the crowns on the letters. Is it makev or not? What would you say?
No.
Yes.
So you would say yes. You would say no. Why would you say yes? Why would you say no?
Because apparently, if you can derive halachos from it, and you just left it out.
So you might say, oh, you can derive halachos. But the Rav pointed out, here's the problem. That, what does the Agadata seem to teach?
That God put them on afterwards.
And that it was considered complete before the crowns went on. Right? The Torah was done, and Moshe said, what are you still doing? It's done. Right? Which implies that maybe you can learn halacha from it, but it would be considered complete without it.
Or maybe it's
right?
God saying it's not actually complete.
Correct. Now, so you could have counter-read it and said, oh, not that way. But the point is, right, again, methodologically, remember I said how agadot are sometimes embedded in halachic sugyot? Right, and that they're there for a reason, they have halachic import. It's clear from context that this Agadata is supposed to say something about the halacha. Now, one way is the way the Rav took it, which is this proves that the letters are considered complete without them, without the crowns. The other way is the way Bluth takes it, which is no, maybe Dafka's proving the opposite, which is the fact that God went back and did this. Because halachot can come out of it shows how essential they are, and that Moshe learned in the process the importance of the crowns. But Bainkach, it's pretty clear that one level of this Agadata is, despite the fact that it sounds wild and agadic and metaphorical, and it is, its placement in context clearly, in addition to everything else that's going on, has a halachic component to it, which shows us, again, like I said, this is going to be what we're going to try to do this year, is take Agadatot and pick them apart methodologically, right? Learn how to learn Agadata, right? So far what we've seen is, one, right, the first question we ask, literal, not literal. Second is, what is it trying to do? Is this halachic, philosophical, ethical? And the answer is, like most things, Agadata can be a little, can be multiple, right? There can be multiple, and third point to make here is that part of the importance of the Agadata can be seen by not just understanding the Agadata itself, but seeing it in context of the Gemara, including the halachic discussions in the middle of. Right? That's necessary to understand the full import. It could go either way, like any other, like many Gemaras, right? But the fact that it seems to be making a halachic point, in addition to whatever other points it's making, seems to be undeniable. Okay, let's go. But I still think the Agadah, if I cut it out of its context, is primarily philosophical. Yeah, all right.
How can you, not necessarily how can you, but like how does it work to draw a halacha from a like minor plot point in the story? Like, why can't I counter making, so the Rosh, wait, like the Rosh says, it's okay to not have the crown because it says that, we have the
Torah
and then he did the afterwards. Why can't I just be like, oh, that was just necessary for the plot of the...
Good. So Oren points out that, I'll put it even sharper, the general assumption is that you're not allowed to learn halacha from Agadata. Right? Except, right, here's where it gets a little bit murky, is we're not learning halacha. It's not like there's an Agadic statement, now we're learning halacha from it. Right? It's that, exactly as you said, the plot depends on a certain, right, assumption. Right? The question here of whether there's halacha, it's not the Agadata. It's the Agadata is predicated on certain assumptions about the relationship between the letters and the tagin. And this is one of those complicated things, is when is it called learning halacha from Agadata? And when is it learning halacha from the halachic or reality assumptions upon which the Agadata makes sense? Right?
Yeah.
And here, that's the interesting point. Right? That it's not really from the Agadata per se. It's from the assumptions that in the Agadata. Right? Again, it's not the Agadata itself, it's the assumption the Agadata makes about the letters. Okay. But primarily, I would say, yeah, this is probably philosophical. What philosophical lessons / problems do you have? So let's start with this, maybe the central problem here that everyone gets bothered by, which is Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Beis Medrash Rabbi Akiva, and now, a bunch of things happen that are really weird. Right? A, he doesn't understand what's going on. B, he calms down when God tells him, but don't, when he hears, where is this from? Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai. Kasha, if it's Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, how do you not know it?
Because okay. He hasn't finished learning the Torah yet.
That's the question. So Yosef says, I have the solution. It's a good solution. It's Rashi's solution. That this is
beginning of what?
Yes, it's before. Look at Rashi.
When Moshe goes to heaven.
Yeah. Yes, that's a question. Okay. Right. Mima keval yadcha. So he says, Nityashvata ato. Rashi says, Shemosha. Moshe calmed down. Why? Ho'ol mishma omer afal pisha dain lo kibla. Right? He calmed down. Why? Because God told him. Sorry, he calmed down because he heard someone say, Moshe, halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, and he hadn't gotten the Torah yet. This story takes place pre-Har Sinai, and therefore the point of this is that Moshe didn't yet know how much he was going to learn from the Torah.
No, it's after Har Sinai.
No. Rashi assumes this is on Har Sinai, but before, meaning before he got the Torah, rather. It's on Har Sinai before he actually got the Torah. I mean, it says that Dibros goes up, right? And like, the way that Rashi imagines this Agadata is that, right, Moshe's hanging out in heaven, I don't know exactly what he's doing, right, while God is writing, kivyachal, right, and as he's finishing up, he sees that it looks like the text is all done, and then he starts putting crowns on, right, and he says, what are you doing? He says, oh, you know, they're halacha from the crowns too. He says, really? Right? Yeah, let me show you, Akiva ben Yosef, right? Now, according to Rashi, so, a deep theological point comes out, which is there such a thing as halacha from the Torah which Moshe didn't know? The answer is no. Right? That's what Rashi learns from this story. Right? Or it's Rashi's point assumption going into the story against which he has to read the whole Gemara. Right? There is, however, a much more radical read of this Gemara, which is
the
yes, thank you. Right? The main message of this Gemara is
Moshe doesn't know everything.
Yes, Moshe doesn't know everything. And then Oren will tell me the obvious kasha.
That means that Rabbi Akiva is just wrong.
Wait a second.
How could he be wrong
that it's all and Yosef
Sinai Moshe doesn't know?
Good. Ah. Right? How could it be? The answer was halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai. By the way, before I answer that question, let me just draw an academic point for you, right? Which is, Why is Moshe in the eighth row?
There's only seven rows.
Good, right? I think I made this word already. Because in the classic Beit Midrash, there are only seven rows. Eight rows meaning you're not even zoiche to be the smallest of the Talmidim. It means you're bachutz, right? Okay, so close parentheses.
So what's the logic behind the opinion that says 18th row?
I probably chai or something. I don't know. It's Maharal. I don't know. Okay. I just don't know. I assume it's a Kabbalistic thing.
It's not
obvious
which row is it?
8th, 18th, who knows? No, it's different. You're sowed. But anyways, so good. So now you're asking me, so, good. What's the message? What was the other possibility?
Maybe he's in the eighth row.
No, not the eighth row. Leave the eighth row. Halacha Moshe Misinai. How could Moshe not know the halacha if this is post-Matan Torah? Now, why would you assume it's post-Matan Torah? What in the story would indicate Rashi might not be right?
Is that out?
The fact that he's like, why wouldn't you give it to this person who knows it better than me?
Even better, right? There's a simpler reason. Why would you assume that this happened?
Well, yeah,
because
he said that's part of it. He said, yeah, he knows it better, but...
Moshe said the Torah's finished.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that Moshe said the Torah's finished, right? So Rashi means that as, oh, it's finished, but I haven't gotten it yet, right? But the other way is, like, no, Moshe looked, it's finished. He's, like, assimilated it all, and now... And now he says, well, what are you still doing here? Right?
Maybe it's showing that, oh, he still has yet to teach, Hashem still has yet to teach that part.
No, that's how Rashi understands it, right? But if you don't think that way...
But I'm saying he's already taught the...
Hold that thought. We'll come to that in a minute. Hold that. How would you read the counter-read? What would the counter-read be?
What, the idea that...
Yeah, what would be the philosophical idea of this Gemara? That there can be Torah that is halacha Moshe Misinai that Moshe doesn't know.
So you're being the funniest things, like, from basic principles. And you're
correct. Right?
How
meaning?
Because
here's the fundamental question. Right? Do you understand the philosophical question that hangs here?
What is halacha Moshe Sinai?
What? It's not just what is halacha Moshe Sinai. What does it mean that the Torah was given? Does it mean that every klal uprat, every principle, every detail was given to Moshe and then everybody else just has to rediscover it? Or the principles were given to Moshe, but later generations are actually legitimately developing the halacha, meaning authentically legitimating it, but Moshe wasn't given it. Meaning, Moshe was given the principles, and everything that develops from it is an authentic derivation, right? An authentic exegesis, but it's not as like something Moshe would know, right? That is a deeply, right, important question. Right? Who do you think would take the view, Zev? Right? Who would take the view that no, Moshe didn't know everything, didn't know the conclusions, didn't know what would happen?
Probably
the Rambam. The Ritva. Right?
Yes.
Right? No, the Rambam takes the opposite view. Right? The Ritva.
The
Rambam would take the first view. The Rambam very much.
Judging by his track, the Rambam probably also write in a Shuva some way that he accepts the second, the first view.
No, so. Right, no, the Rambam would probably take the first view, more likely. But the Ritva, who says that when Moshe went to heaven, right, probably playing this Gemara, he quotes Chochmei Tzarfat, what did he find? Come on. 49 reasons l'heter, 49 reasons l'isra on everything. And what did he say to God? How could it be that it's both usra and mutter? There's 49 reasons l'isra and heter. And God said, don't worry, it's masr l'chacham, shulchal dor v'dor, l'kvah halacha. I gave it to each generation to figure out the halacha.
Right.
Meaning, the Ritva's view is that, yes, authentically, there's multiple possibilities of different ways this could develop, and those interpretations are authentic. Even if Moshe wouldn't have known. Right? And that is a fundamental philosophical question. Do you think that every detail was given to Moshe and now we're just rediscovering it? Or do you think that the way of Torah is that principles were given and then as we learn Torah and as new shailas come up and as we develop, that organic derivation from Torah is in fact considered L'Moshe Misinai even though he didn't know it? Right? So that is a super important philosophical question, and that seems to be what's at stake in whether, what does it hang on in the Sagarata? Timing.
Yeah.
That's it, timing. Right? But it seems clear that this Gemara, whether you like it or not, one of its central philosophical questions is, right, what is the relationship between later Torah and Torah's Moshe? Now, the conclusion is not clear, but the point of the Agarata, that is one of the questions trying to answer, is clear. Now, Yosef, being a good brisker, tells me, oh, Svedinim. I have a better answer, which is, Gamze ve Gamze Nachon. Right? Good. Good. Both are true. Give me an interpretation. Give me a third possibility.
I guess that Moshe finished learning the text of the Torah, but not the crown.
Good. Good. This is a very, it happens to me that this is the Kabbalistic read of the Maharal. Right? The Maharal says, ah, I got it. No, and now watch his read. His read is very careful.
This just seems
right?
to be a Pashut read if you were holding that it was given after Moshe was taught the Torah.
Okay, but
look, how can you say Moshe taught everything the crowns teach, and now he's saying you don't need the crowns?
Exactly. So what does he say? He says, no, there are two types of Torah. There's the Torah of the letters, right, which are represented metaphorically by the letters, allegorically by the letters, right, that Moshe has. And the letter, the halacha represented by the crowns, Moshe didn't learn.
Which is what?
Oh, and now you'll say, okay, what the heck is that?
Right?
I get it. It's metaphorical. Now, pray tell, decipher the code. Right? Remember, this is the key in Agadata. Decipher the code. Now, I don't know every possibility, but let me give you one. Again, to answer Rafi's question before, right? I'm not necessarily giving you an exhaustive interpretation of every Agadata. Right? Sometimes I'll, you know, do a survey, and sometimes I'll try to, but definitely the first one that we're doing this, try to understand the types of moves you can make in Agadata, right? And right, the introduction hopefully opened your eyes to the type of moves that are legitimate, right? But you'll see how complicated it is actually do that in practice, okay? So the Maharal takes this middle position, Svedinim. Good. Here's what he says, okay? Right, he goes to the whole question. How could it be that he doesn't, you know, he knows Torah, he doesn't know Torah, I don't know what's going on. So he says, so he says, okay. There are two things. Kshem shegufati vocha b'Torah morim al divrei Torah atzma. The letters of the Torah represent, are a code for gufei Torah. Right? Meaning halachot, main points. Right? Letters, you know, text. Right? Chomer. Right? You understand where he's doing this? Right? He reads a little bit Kabbalistically, so he reads often coded. Right? Kabbalistic thinking, right? The Grod does this also, right? He thinks that Agadot are written in code. So you have to decode them. So he says, okay, what would a letter represent? Words, letters represent? Like core concepts, Gufei Torah, Halachot, right? And what are the Tagin? Morim al Hasagot Dakim Kaharim Bisa'ara Yotzim Min HaTorah Atzma. So he says, well, let's think about it. Visually, what are they? Little tiny little things that mountains come out of, right? Many halachot come out of. So what does that do to him? How do you decode metaphors? You look for other places the metaphors are used. Good. What is the metaphor used by Chazal to describe many halachot which come from a tiny point? Hararim atluyim b'sara, mountains that hang on a thread, on a hair, right? So these are the very nuanced questions, right, that come out of it. He says, he said, those things. And he said, what happened? He sees God, so to speak, and he says, oh, so these conceptual, you know, mountains, that's separate from the basic halachot, isn't it? Right? So what is... And he says to God, Mim akev al yadcha. Again, he reads this whole thing in code. He says, so what does it mean that he says to God, who's holding you back? Klomar. Ki eil asagot adagin shomare alayna tagin lakot hasakatan im rechokim en adam shuba olem azem murgash im bodakut hasichli. He said, these like conceptual, like really sharp things, no human being can really understand that, right? Like, what is the point of like hiding? I don't know if he means here lumdus, probably means more Kabbalah, right? There's like secrets. But he said, why would you even put it in the Torah if no one can understand them? Right?
Right.
So now,
so the people that learn Kabbalah can say that they're there.
Now, by the way, according to the first two reads that we had, both Rashi and let's say a Ritva-esque approach, according to either of those, is Rabbi Kiva really greater than Moshe? No. Right?
No,
meaning death, right? It's he's later, right?
Yeah.
Right? But he, but the Maral says, no, 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 no. It actually is pshuto kemashmao. He says, look, there will be a tzaddik who will understand all of these things. So Moshe says, really? Please, let me see him. Right? If there's someone who's going to understand that which is beyond human beings, so please show it to me. Show him to me. Good. So now he asks the fundamental question. Vata al titma. Masha amru ki lo yada Moshe benu mai kamre. Says, wait a second. So, I don't get it. Ben gach u ben gach. How could Moshe understand? Fine. The letters, the basic halacha, the crowns are, you know, I don't know, all these other things. But how did Moshe understand? He's saying not that Rabbi Akiva is greater, but they were different. They were different. Why are they different?
That's like the classic rabbi answer. Neither one of them was greater. They just weren't the same.
Correct. Separate but equal. Right? It says, I've called Nemraling and Zed. Well, actually not. Separate but unequal. But okay. As always. That was the court decision. We know. Okay. I will call them Aralim Yanzet. Shlo Hayelam Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Chibur Alatagin. Zevnik Moshe Rabbeinu Asagadu Bechalat Torashi Torachat Klalit. Shnei Marv Zadur Abatagim Yotzin Minaot. V'Asagal Asaga. He said, let me explain it to you. This is the difference. You can only derive things from the Torah if you aren't Moshe. Why? Because Moshe knew the whole Torah. He was given it by God. It was one holistic thing. He understood every little thing. Right? He understood the whole meta picture. But therefore...
Mystifies the trees kind of thing?
No, the other way around. Right? The trees aren't for someone who is integrated into the forest. Like Himamish, right, sees the greater picture. So zeroing in on these little things that come out of it but are not fundamental, right? Moshe was given the big picture of the Torah. But like these little things, and he says, and then he does the following. He says, listen, how did Moshe get the Torah? Nevuah. Nevuah can give you the basics of the Torah. What do you need to be able to derive things from the Torah? Yes, exactly. Right? You need...
Doesn't sound very Kabbalistic.
Right? Well, it's some sort of Kabbalistic Brisker combination, right? Right? He says... Your mind. Right? He says... Right? Here's the problem. He says Moshe understands the Torah holistically as a Navi. So that's the basics. But these derivations are from the human world. Right? They have to be humans. They have to be human intellect. They have to be people. Right? These things that come out of it, Moshe, that's not Moshe's world. Moshe is like, I get, right, the godly Torah. That is text. Everything else is left, so to speak, to the human world. And Moshe doesn't live there. He said, if Moshe really understood them, then they would have become Gufei Torah. Right? As Rosenzweig once said, right? That's the Rambam's point. That Moshe's Nevuah is like nobody else's Torah. It's like no one else's Nevuah. Because his Nevuah is equivalent to Torah. Anything he knew is integrated into Gufa Torah. He can't know things which derive from Torah. Because by him knowing them and becoming Nevuah, they become the Gufa of the Torah. That is the nature of his Nevuah. Right? That which he knew about the Torah transformed the Gufa Torah. You can't do that. That's not who Moshe is. Right? Moshe is identical with his high-level Nevuah that integrates him to the Torah. There is no such thing as things that are ancillary. Right? Whatever he knows becomes primary.
Basically,
right?
If Moshe knew it, it couldn't be a derivation of that.
Exactly.
Be,
right? Moshe isn't from that world. He's... Right? I know, this is a bit mystical.
I
cannot promise you that I understand everything Maharal's saying.
Right.
Methodologically, I understand what he's doing.
Yeah.
Right? Methodologically, he's saying, right? Meaning, again, like I said, I'm not trying to give you everything or claim I understand everything, but methodologically, right, he's taking a detailed coded read. Right? Meaning he's not taking a generic philosophical read. The first two, he said, were basically generic philosophy. He's taking a very strict coded read, and therefore, everything here must stand for something. Right? Rabbi Kiva must stand for a model. Moshe must stand for a model. The letters must stand for a model, right? For an archetype. The crowns must stand for an archetype. And I have to decode them and figure out what the message is, right? Now, by the time you get to the end, I'm not 100% sure I know what the message is, right? But
the only
problem, that's just that I'm not smart enough to understand this, right?
The only thing that like, this seems to like snag on that reasoning is it says, I think, in... I think it's Sanhedrin it mentions, but we'll probably just cut it, right? Like that the reason that one of the kings didn't want to go to war with the other one is because all the Nuggies were saying the same thing. And he knew from a tradition from his father, from like the Davidic dynasty, that if two Nuggies say the same thing, there's something fishy going on because the DMC are looking differently.
Okay.
So according to this, if another person had gotten the Torah, we would have gotten a different Torah.
Oh, that's probably
no,
true.
No, that's but,
well, that's only lower level. That's the point. But I think what the Maharal is getting at, though, I'm not 100% sure, but I think what's the Maharal saying? Right, now this is somewhere in between Rashi and right Ritva's model. What is he really, what's he saying? He's saying, what is essential to the Torah? The ability to darshan. But what does the ability to darshan mean?
That Moshe didn't know it.
That it's not core.
Yeah.
Meaning that it's not the Torah itself, right?
Yeah.
The fact that there's such a thing called derivation means that it's derived from. But anything Moshe got directly from God explicitly cannot be derived. It already is. Right? It already is the goof of the Torah. There has to be something.
That's such a weird... Then what would he say Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim is?
Ah, so what he'll say Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim? This he'll say Ritva-like. No, it's a legitimate derivation from the principles of Moshe. Right? But it's Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, but it's not goof of Torah. Right, it's a derivation, it's, I don't know, it's not the Gufa Torah, I'll put it that
but
way.
But there's only the Gemara, wouldn't be Torah, though. It would be like...
No, it is Torah, it's just not like that. It's like derivations from the Torah.
But then what does he say to him?
He's like...
So but now, there's one more coded thing he has to say to them, which is what? What's the coded question he has to ask him?
The crowns?
No, come on, there's another coded question. We want it, right? Which is, so Moshe said to God, why don't you give the Torah through him? Right? What was he saying? Remember, if he's reading this coded, then this isn't just, why don't you give it through him, that person. What's he really saying?
Why
did you choose to give it
why did
through
you
me as, right? Begeder Navi.
Right.
Why don't you give it to someone who is working Begeder Chacham, who's capable of darshaning? Why did you make that choice?
Right?
And God says to him, Seder HaMetziah Shesider Hashem Yisbarach B'machshav T'v'chachmaso Kachiev Shlo Tinasen HaTorah Al Yedei Rabbi Kiva Ki Am Al Yedei Moshe. Why? Ki Rabbi Kiva Ki Lo Yemesulak Gam Min HaOlam HaZeh Ve'in Lo Chilak Olam HaZeh Hu Olam HaMurgash Kach Yish Rabbi Kiva Pechot El HaTagin Hashem Mivdol Me Olam HaMurgash V'lochem HaShem Yishay HaShalit Olam HaZeh V'wikar Olam HaMurgash. Then he says something which is totally Kabbalistic and also totally counterintuitive to me, which is the following. Rabbi Kiva represents, ironically, Olam Haba, someone who's totally removed from this world. And
but the person who's literally...
And Moshe is owned this world, essentially, right? With Sholeit B'Kol HaOlam.
Oh, man.
Right? Again, this is Kabbalistic, but I'm just showing you methodologically.
Moshe is literally sitting in heaven, and God's like... Oh,
yeah, I didn't say this was necessarily the most compelling read. I would have said the opposite. Right, I would have said the opposite, right? If you asked me to read a coded read, right, I would have said the opposite, which is Moshe is b'shamayim, and therefore he gets the principles. But the application of the laws, right, has to come through a human being. Right? That's how I would have read this Gemara, right? And that then Moshe says to God, but if he can do it, right, he can apply it, he can derive, give it through him, and God says... No, right? The Torah has to be given through someone from another world, has to bring it down to man. Right? That's how I would have read it. What drives the Maharal to flip it?
Big philosophy about the Torah that it brings us up to God.
Well, maybe that, but I assume it's also partially the fact that, like, Rabbi Kiva is capable of surviving inhuman pain.
Mm.
Right? And is the only person who... And what else? It goes to Bartizan. What else? Right, in this story, what else?
Getting coned up.
And
he knows.
Moshe doesn't understand Sadik Viralo, and Rabbi Kiva doesn't question it.
Mm.
Right? Which would put Rabbi Kiva beyond this world because he can deal with the seeming contradiction in this world of tzaddikim suffering, and Moshe can't, which means Moshe is in this world still viewing it as tzaddik v'ra'lo, right? Tzaddik v'tovlo, and Moshe and tzaddik v'ra'lo, Rasha v'tovlo, and Rabbi Akiva can somehow move beyond that.
Right.
And I assume that's what drives the, you know, that seems to be what drives the Maharal's read. Again, I don't know if I'm convinced of every move here, or I even understand every move here, right? But I do understand methodologically what's driving him to take a line-by-line coded read. You could quibble on the coding, right? Now, kach ala b'machshava lefanai. Let's move through. That happens twice in this story. Let's go to the second half of the story. Second half of the story moves to a philosophical rumination, not about the nature of Torah, but tzaddik, right? Tzaddik v'ra'lo, Rasha v'tovlo. What? Where Moshe says, "Show me his reward," and he sees him scraping off the skin, and he says, "Zu Torah v'zu schara." Right? This is the Torah's reward, and Hashem says, "Shh," right? "Shh," right? So this is clearly a rumination on, right? Tzaddik v'tovlo, right? Good. Good, now let's do this. What else do you need to do with Agadata, just like with the Gemara? What do you need to do to understand any Agadata like you would any Gemara?
Havamina.
Great, and what else? Think like a Bala Tosfot.
Translation.
We've done Havamina Maskana. We've done line by line.
Compared to other Gemara.
Good, compared to other Gemaras. Good. What other Gemara would I compare it to?
Agadata.
The Gemara.
Good, Agadata. Which Gemara do I have to?
Rabbi Akiva gets killed.
Very good. The one that tells me the whole story, right? Methodologically speaking, that's what I have to do. Good, what happens in that story?
He gets pwned.
Yes, and what happens at that moment?
And he's like,
no! He says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem
Echad.
And what is I? And what does Talmidim say?
In this? Like,
meaning, what do they say?
Why are you smiling? Why are you smiling?
Like, how far do we take the idea of like.
Yes! Right? The challenge of Moshe is put in the mouths of his students! And what does he say?
All my life I was bothered by the like, you should give your life for like God or whatever. I don't know the
pasuk. V'havta Shem Elokecha. I'm tired. V'havta Shem Elokecha. Rebbe Chol V'havta Elokecha. Afilu Hu No Tel Is Nishmascha. Right?
And now I get the chance to fulfill it and not be happy.
Good! Tell me. So first things first, what do you learn from the comparison to that one?
That the reward isn't the combing itself. The reward is you get to fulfill.
No, it's not reward. No. What do you learn? What's the Gemara's point?
Which Gemara?
So,
compare them!
The answer to Tzad Gavaralo is the mitzvah.
That really.
No, what's Moshe? What is Rabbi Kiva's godless?
Really mitzvah's not actually.
What does he know the answer is?
That it's not.
You don't need an answer.
Right?
You don't necessarily need an answer, but that doesn't necessarily matter. Who doesn't understand that?
Moshe.
How do I know that it's not clear? Well, it's really not clear. Right? Because there's a machlokas in Mana. There's a machlokas.
He wrote you. Right.
That's one of them. Good. There's another one. What is the Gemara saying, brachot? Right? I was debating giving it to you, but I figured the first time I just want to talk it out. Right? Gemara and Brachot is another machlokas. When Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Shamayim the next time, after this time, what's the next time?
After forgiveness.
Well, okay, sorry. Take that back. Yes, after he breaks the loop close, when he goes back up, yes, right? Yeah. What does he say to God? Show me. No, he says that the first time. Show me. Your way is, how does the Gemara understand that?
Tzaddik v'ra'lo.
Good! Show me Tzaddik v'ra'lo. Explain to me theodicy. Explain to me divine justice. And you have a machlokas in that Gemara. What's the machlokas?
Whether he
did it or not.
Whether God answers him or doesn't answer him. How do I know that Gemara is in conversation with this Gemara? Besides the fact that the central question here is theodicy. And Moshe is asking about it.
What up to Shemayim?
What's the pasuk that it's all based on? What is the weird phrase in this Gemara? Chazor le acharecha.
Oh, yes.
And what is that? What bells to that ring in your head?
That you go
God said. It's a pasuk. You can't see my face, but you will see et achorai. Viraita et achorai. You'll see my back. Ufanai lo yirau. And what's the machlokes in the Gemara?
Is that an answer?
Is that? Does that mean he learned the secret, just not in some sort of direct way, or he didn't learn it? That's why he can only see his back and not his front. But this Gemara is still in conversation with that Gemara, which is saying that Moshe, what did he struggle with? Understanding tzaddik v'ra'alo v'rash v'tovlo, divine justice, right? And when he sees it, Rabbi Akiva, he says, "I don't understand." And what does God say in this one? Shah.
Right.
This Gemara is paskening, so to speak, or is going according to the shita that
he didn't know.
Well, one of two possibilities: either
he didn't know,
he never gets an answer, or
this is a roundabout
answer. That's why he goes up a second time. Remember, that's the second time. This is the time when he goes to the Torah.
Why?
Right? It's clear that this Gemara is in conversation because it's clear the first time does he get an answer to Tzadik Varalo?
No.
What's the other Gemara saying?
Maybe he did the second time.
But maybe the second time when Klal Yisrael's fate depends on it, maybe he gets the answer, or he manages to save the Jewish people, but he never gets an answer. Right? This is, if you connect the two Gemaras, this is part, well, really the three Gemaras. Right? What are the three Gemaras? Rabbi Kiva dying, where you have the students asking the same Shaila, and God, right? And Rabbi Kiva saying, don't worry about it so much. Right? Meaning Rabbi Kiva isn't bothered by it, which is his greatness. Right? And then this time Moshe doesn't get it, and then the machlokes, what about the next time when it's not chazor l'achorecha, but it's v'ra'ita l'achorai? Did he get the answer or not then? Right? There's one more Gemara. Right? There's one more Gemara. It's a Gemara you mentioned. What's the one more Gemara you need to understand this Gemara? It was what you said all at the beginning when I said, what Gemara am I going to do? You said?
Pardes.
Good. The Gemara says Rabbi Kiva goes to Pardes, and he, what? How does he survive Pardes? Right, the mystical orchard of heaven. Oh, right, the famous Gemara in Chagiga. Okay, very quickly. There are four, according to the Gemara in Chagiga. Right, there's all the secrets of the world are in this Pardes, this mystical Pardes, whatever it means. Okay, there are four people who go in.
Are we gonna do that next time?
No, because it's not enough. So not right now. Maybe one day. It's a great Gemara. Right, you go into the heaven. Right. One goes crazy, one dies. Rabbi Kiva goes in and strengthens his faith. And one goes in, Elisha ben Avuya goes in and loses his faith, becomes Acher. Good. Why does Acher lose faith?
Because he doesn't get an answer.
Oh, you see. What question? How do I know?
He sees the Tashrim city.
Good. No, before that.
What?
The Gemara says, what drove Achla Federer?
He saw the guy climbing the ladder.
He saw a guy climbing up a ladder to do Kansipur, where the Torah says you'll live a long life, and he falls to his death.
He was doing
Kibbut Abba Aim, right? And he says, the Torah says he should live a long time, right? And he dies in the process of the mitzvah. There must be no God. And the Gemara says, what was the response? He didn't understand. There's Olam Hazan Olam Haba, which means that according to the Gemara, what drives Acher off the Derech? Not understanding Tzadik V'Ralo.
Right.
And how does Rabbi Kiva survive Pardes? According to the Gemara? Yes, he doesn't need the answer. How does it say it in Chagiga? He knows where not to look. Right? He doesn't look at the... He doesn't look at the Mayim. He doesn't... Right?
That's in the last paragraph. Is the story of the Pardes in the last?
It's the first paragraph. First paragraph of Chagiga. Right? First paragraph of Chagiga. But what's the point? Meaning, what's the point that the Gemara says there will be Kiva? How does he deal with the problem of theodicy? Meaning, how does he knock off the Derech Lagacher? He knows how not to look. Meaning, he doesn't need to know everything. Right? What is that Gemara clearly thinking? Right? That what's the lesson? You can never know theodicy. Moshe tried, God shut him down. Rabbi Kiva didn't bother looking. Right? And how do you see that in his life?
When he died.
When he died, and everyone else said, isn't this a violation of good divine justice? He said, I love God. Right?
Whatever.
You see, again, each of these deserves more. But today I just wanted to do methodology. I wanted to point out how, right? To understand this Gemara, you have to realize it's in conversation, just like you would with a Lumdish Gemara, right? You have to piece together all the parts of Shas to put it together. This is what the Radba says. Agadah does the same way. that Chazal wanted to hide complicated philosophical ideas, so what do? They cut it into pieces, scattered it in shas, and said, good luck, right? Figure it out, the way the Rambam does the Meravuchim, right? I hide things here, I hide things there, it seems like contradiction, put it together, you'll figure out what I mean, right? Same thing is true in the Agadita. One more. Okay, one more level to this, just to, because you'll be so confused by the end of this, okay? Right? But today is just, you know, sort of getting you in the mood of what it means to actually employ these methodologies, and it's not easy, right? Okay, one more possibility of Gemara that this is in conversation with. Here's a wild one. Wild one. Okay. Chazal say, why does the first parak of Bereishis only have the name Elokim and the second parak of Bereishis has Hashem Elokim? Yes, but what's the Lashon of the Gemara? Betchila Allah b'marshavto. God thought originally to create the world just with justice, Shem Elokim, right? And then he realized the world could not survive on justice. It needed to have Rachamim, Hashem Elokim. So I once heard from my clapper who said, wait a second, that's the same phrase. Kach Allah b'machshava lefanai. Right? Means what? Why does Rabbi Kiva die such a terrible death? Isn't he perfect? Isn't he greater than Moshe? Isn't he incredible? Right? The Torah could be given to him. He knows more than anything. He devotes himself to Torah more than anybody in the history of the world. Or maybe not. Or he's almost as great or whatever. Moshe's impressed. Moshe can't make it in his base medrash. Good. So he said, yeah. In what world would even Rabbi Kiva have his skin scraped off with metal combs? Yes, a world of kulodin, because no one can survive in a world of perfect din, because no one, even Rabbi Akiva, is perfect. Right? You can't survive in din. But maybe why did he die? Because he was so great that God let him, right? God actually let him live in the original world, so to speak. But therefore, his death is an example of what happens, right? Had the world lived pure justice, right? That even Rabbi Kiva wouldn't have survived. Now, who can't live in that world?
Everybody else.
And in this story, who can't live in that world?
Moshe.
Why can't Moshe live in that world? This is my addition, but why can't Moshe live in this world?
On that level, justice stops looking like justice does.
Oh, come on. Come on, put the last piece together. Why can't Moshe exist in that world?
Because he doesn't understand justice.
No, because when does he ask to understand God's justice?
For Rachamim thing.
Yes, to save Klal Yisrael, because he needs Rachamim. Because in justice, God says the Jews are about to be destroyed. So what does he say?
Have you understood justice?
Yes, give me the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. Go to plan two. Moshe can't survive there because then he couldn't do what he needs to do, which is
save
the Jewish people. Right?
But he was doing that for them.
Fine. But if you want to live in a world of justice, you want to understand what the world looks like in justice,
you have
to live with the consequences. The Jews will have to be destroyed. Right? Rabbi Kiva could take it on himself. Fine. But Moshe, what hung in the balance for him was, are the Jews going to be annihilated? If you want to live in that world of Rabbi Kiva, pure din, or even Rabbi Kiva can't handle it, Kavah Omer, the nation that just worshipped Avodah Zarah, the day of Matan Torah. And I think that's also in conversation with this. Okay, there's much more we could do on this Gemara, right? But again, like I said, what I'm trying to do this year is both try to understand the Gemaras in Menachot, but also, more importantly, what I want to do is just show you the types of questions you need to ask, right? And what you've seen is just today, we've dealt with, right, how do you deal with broad allegorical problems, right? Anthropomorphism. How do you deal with, right? Figure out what is the halachic import of an agadita, right? What are the agadic questions, philosophical questions, even being dealt with, right? Then once you have that, how do you deal with that with other Gemaras, right? How do you figure out what the philosophical message is? How do you put that in conversation with other Gemaras, right? What are the conclusions, which just like in a halachic one, you can have machlokot about everything. And we use the Maharal to understand at least sort of what it would look like to have a coded read rather than a generic allegorical read, right? You understand the difference, right? Allegorical read is like this has a generic message, right? But I don't have to trace it line by line. The Maharal is taking the coded methodology, which is everything has to be decoded, which tends to be more... Marshad does a little bit of that. The Mekubalim tend to do a little bit of that, right? And we've used this Gemara to sort of examine, again, broad methodological questions, right? Both in Torah in general, but also in how to read a Gemara. Okay, those are my thoughts. Again, there's much more to do on it, but today I decided against giving you actually sources and sites. I wanted to more discuss and highlight methodological points rather than overwhelm you with sources, which, as you know, is my tendency is just to overwhelm you with sources. But you know, sometimes it's easier to see the methodological questions when I keep the sources to myself. Though maybe next time I'll at least give you the parallel Gemaras. I think that'll be helpful to at least have the parallel Gemaras. But you know, for this time, I just wanted to at least draw the general sketch. Okay.